Sesame Street Show with my good friend Mike Miller.
You're listening to great music on my good friend Mike Miller's Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed, member from the Doo-Wop Shop.
Hi, everybody. This is your cousin Brucey, and you're listening to my good friend, my cousin Mike Miller, right here on the Harmony Street Radio Show.
Hi, this is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Shelly Bachansky from Vito and the Salutations, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
This is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest a guy who has been a major part of this genre for many, many years, and I'm talking about the doo-wop R&B genre, one of the original founders of Vito and the Salutations, and a good friend, Mr. Shelly Bachansky. How you doing, Shelly?
Okay, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And, you know, it's really funny because people have been saying to me since I've been doing the show, why don't you get on and talk about Vito and the Salutations? They made such a big mark. And as many times as I've spoken to Vito and Vito says, yeah, you know, we'll do it. He's still not ready to do it for some reason. So, Vito, I love you, but so with that said, let's just talk about Shelly. We'll take a little break and we'll talk about the Salutations later. You were born in Brooklyn, correct?
Yes, I was.
And you were born in a place in Brooklyn where, for some reason, guys that were born in Brooklyn had some kind of carte blanche in order to become big in the business, because so many of the doo-wop groups that we know and love came from every avenue of Brooklyn. Almost every group that recorded in that started in Brooklyn had a hit, and it was nice to be surrounded by all of those other people.
Right.
You know.
I knew so many groups from different areas. But basically, I myself came from Brownsville.
Right.
And there was a lot of groups coming out of there. Most of them were black groups, but we were one of the few white groups that came out of there. That people would know of.
Right. Now let me ask you this. You had music in your family growing up. How did you stumble upon this genre? And when did you realize that you had some vocals that you needed to share with people?
Well, actually, it started off with one of the original members of the group, Frank Fox,
uh-huh.
who lived in the neighborhood. And I was like 11, 12 years old, and he was already singing
right.
with some guys. And I didn't even know what it was about. I mean, I'm going back to like 1954.
Right, wow.
And he said, you know, I think maybe you could try this note, try that. I realized I was doing first tenor then. Now I'm doing second.
Right.
But he's really one of the big influences on my singing.
Right.
You know, just by hanging around with him.
Yep.
And, we became very close friends. And
Now, Frankie was a little bit older than you?
No, he was actually younger than me.
Oh, okay, but he had already cut his teeth on some
of
the
Harmony. Oh, yeah, he was like a doo-wop guy from, well, it wasn't called doo-wop then, but he was very much into R&B.
Right, right.
And the real old stuff, you know, the real, the Ravens and the Orioles and that kind of stuff. Well, we didn't even hear that stuff.
Yeah, well, what's really funny is that, you know, I was the dean in the Bronx, and I was at Castle Hill Junior High School, and
right.
we had an awful lot of very Bronx-y people there. One of the people that I had the children of Jimmy Keys from the Chords.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he was a Bronx guy, and his kids had Jimmy Jr. and Paul, and they were not great kids. They got in trouble a lot. Paul was in special ed, and they used to say, my father, man, he's a bum, he's a this, he's a ba 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 ba. And I say, your father's a legend. And I used to invite Jimmy in to do career day, and he would come in with his sharkskin suit and his polished shoes, and he would talk about how the R&B groups got stolen, you know, their royalties were stolen, and the white groups recorded the hits, their hits on the pop market, made all the money, and he died penniless, believe it or not. I was going to take him, to Johnny B's radio show in Waterbury. He was going to sleep over my house, and then I was going
right.
to take him out to Johnny's show and whatever. And he died like the week before we were supposed to do that. And he was a terrific man. But going back to 1954, he was one of those pioneers, you know, from those days, strict R&B, you know.
Right. That's right. And his record was covered by the Crew Cuts,
mm-hmm.
who had the hit. At the time.
Exactly right. And, you know, we talk about that stuff all the time, Little Darlin' and you know, some of the other tunes that were covered that, you know, where the original group really didn't get that much, notoriety. So, okay, you're hanging with Frankie and, you know, he says, come on, Shelly, you know, I want you to sing a little bit. And you're starting to listen because I'm always of the theory that, you know, in order to be a good group singer, more so than being a good singer, you got to be a good listener. Because if you hear what to sing, it's much easier to sing it.
Right, you have to have an ear for harmony.
Exactly.
And I know of many instances where a group has a terrific lead singer,
right.
and the guy can't do harmony.
Oh, in many of the groups, as a matter
yeah.
of one of them is the guy we mentioned before we started this interview, no names, you know, where you know they're good at cutting a lead, but if you put them in a group, they just cannot hear the harmony.
Right.
And in the old days, as you know, we didn't spend an awful lot of time learning tunes, man. We just chimed off and we did it.
Right. That's it.
You know,
on the street, you know, we were the instruments with our mouths.
Right. I actually, when we spoke the other day, I neglected to tell you that not only was I in a group that recorded one of Vito's hits, but Harmony Street with the three girls also did a version of Unchained Melody. Believe
oh,
it or
really?
Not, which we recorded, which I'm going to send you, which was pretty slick because, and we'll talk about Unchained Melody later as being one of those tunes that not every group tackled because not every group could take that tune on. There was,
right.
because you had to be solid from the bass all the way up through the notes up into the false. And if you didn't have the horses to do that tune, you just had
right.
better stay away from it.
That's right.
You know,
and, we we were influenced by the Marcells with doing Blue Moon.
Oh.
And that's really one of the, probably the impetus that got us to say, we were sitting around and saying, you know, why don't we take a beautiful ballad and do like the Marcells did, the Blue Moon.
Wow. But you took it a step further.
And what's a better ballad than Unchained Melody?
No, I agree with you because that's like from one end of the spectrum to the other. But,
right.
You know, if you listen or if you read some of the books like The Forgotten Third of Rock and Roll and some of those where they explain how the music went through the ranks from the R&B to the quote unquote Italo doo-wop to the quote unquote non-syllable silly bass lines, you know.
Right,
that,
right.
You know, and that kind of stuff. I would say that Unchained Melody was the quintessential example of those kind of tunes. And the funny thing about Unchained Melody is that people either loved it or they hated it.
Right. They compared it to the slow one.
Right.
And said, oh, my God, what did they do with this?
Right.
But, and then the other on the other hand, people loved it the way what right. we did with it.
Oh, 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 oh. Come on, pretty baby, one more time. If I dream inside, time, wait for me, I'll be coming home, my baby. Yep, 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 coming home. Yep, yep, in the moment.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Very good friends of mine were the Quotations.
Oh.
When they did that with Imagination,
yeah.
It was tremendous. It was great. It was Larry, Harvey, Luano, and first tenor was Richie Schwartz. All from the Kings Highway area in Brooklyn.
Right, because I remember they were on Relic Records with us, and they did a couple of cuts on Relic, and I think they did their hit on there as well, but they did it a cappella.
Oh, okay.
In those days. Let's get back to Shelley. So you're hanging with Frankie,
and
right. How did things evolve? Who were the guys that you were singing with Frankie on the corner?
Oh, these were the guys that we all hung out in the Brownsville Boys Club.
Uh-huh.
It was a guy, Murray Kanner, Steve Walkoff, guys like that I haven't seen in maybe 60 years, 50 years.
Wow. And, and so it was a real mixture of Jews and Italians.
Yes, it was.
Right.
And we would go to do local church or synagogue events.
Right.
And then we hooked up with some other guys from Queens who later became the Newports.
Ah,
and Jimmy Pace and Ronnie Pomerantz, Joel Reinweib, who's now the lead singer, and he's one of the guys in the Dimensions, and the Tercels. So we had a group right before we formed Vito and the Salutation.
Right, right. Well, you know what it is, around every group, there's always like concentric circles of guys who were responsible for the group and guys who sang with the group and guys who didn't sing with the group and guys who came and they went and they, you know, and then there's the nucleus. And, but, you know, every group has a specific bunch of guys that if it wasn't for all of those guys, it wouldn't have happened, you know. So when you met on the street corner, you know, and I'm sure you did sing on the street corner when the weather was warm. Where did you sing?
We would sing everywhere, in the boys' club, on the street corner, in the hallway. When it was winter, we hang out in the hallway.
Right.
And they could keep warm in the apartment building. And basically, it was outdoors. We would stay in front of a gas station on Hankerman and Osborne in Brownsville. Yeah, that was our big hangout.
Well,
there
was
30 guys there.
I never missed a Murray show. I was always there, even from the time I was 12 and 13.
Right.
And, you know, I'm assuming that you were in some of the Murray shows as well.
Oh, yeah, in the Murray shows, yeah, we did some shows with them later on when we formed the, you know, the Salutations.
Right, right, because the Brooklyn
Fox. Not so much in the Brooklyn Fox, but we did a lot of other shows with him at different country clubs.
Right.
At venues like that.
Very, very cool. So, so tell me, all right, so now you guys are getting a little more sophisticated in your singing, and the guys are starting to find each other to get the consummate group. You know, guys come, guys go, guys that, you know, when you really like the sound, you say, okay, these guys stay, those guys over there forming their own group, whatever. What happened from them, from then? I know Frankie had a long history, you know, and his name is synonymous with the group.
Right.
How did everything kind of come together?
Well, through Jimmy Pace and the guys from Sunnyside, Queens, we met Ray Russell. And he became he originally was with the Newports, and then he became our first tenor.
Right.
So it was Ray, myself, Frankie.
Right.
Right. And we were with Joel Reinweib. He was our lead singer.
Uh huh.
And we changed the name. It wasn't the Newports anymore.
Right.
We called ourselves the Gems, but we never did anything with for recordings or anything.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But just a local group.
Right.
Actually, it was guys from Brooklyn and guys from Queens mixed.
Yeah, it's too bad you never put the Gems on a tape recorder. You know, we used to have the little reels to reel in. When you talk to guys and you say, you know, what's that noise on that record? I distinctly heard a phone ringing in the middle of that hit record, and it's amazing how many noises and sounds you hear in the backs of records that they couldn't get rid of years ago, you know, with telephones ringing and chairs getting knocked over.
Like today, right?
Yeah,
technology was nowhere near this.
Well, you know, because I have Pro Tools in the house, and you know, it's like you can do anything. You can get into the waveform, change it. You can take the vibrato out of it. You can do pitch correction. You can do. I mean, you know, there's not too many things that you can't do, you know, to a vocal these days. You know, including the radio thing. And what's funny about this show is that they let me do whatever I want. I mean, David Brigati, who I know most of my life, when I interviewed him, I started bleeping certain things, and then I just said, the hell with it.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you know him?
Yeah.
You know.
The high five.
Screw him. Well, you know, David really was the brains behind the Rascals and produced
most. Isn't he on most of their records?
He's on most of their records. He arranged most of the harmonies. I think he's in the rock with them. And, of course, he was with Joey D for all those years, you know. But
yeah.
David really and truly, and I'm going to say this, was the most talented. Of all of them, he was the most talented guy in that entire situation.
Right. I bought that record when it came out, Dollar Theater, and just the Shoulder to Cry on, and it was on Decca Records. It was pretty impressive back then.
He's got an amazingly he's got a very soulful way of looking at things. He's got a good head musically, you know.
Right.
So okay, this is all coming together now, you know, for the Salutations and Lightning Strikes and whatever. And when did you all look at each other and say, okay, this is our group. This is what we got. Let's go with it.
Well, that's about the time we met Vito.
Right, okay.
Okay, now, and Vito was an immigrant from Italy. He came here when he was about 10 years old, and that was, I think that was around 1956.
Right.
And we met him. We were singing around the neighborhood and all. He was much younger than us. He was like the kid, you know.
Right.
And we were heard by Dave Rick, who became our manager.
Right. Let's talk about Dave Rick a little bit. What was Dave Rick like when you first met him?
He was driving a taxi cab.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and he was riding around, and he heard us singing on Pitkin Avenue in Brownsville.
Wow.
And he said, you know, why don't you guys sound good? Come to my house, here's my card, blah, blah, blah. And we went there, and that's what happened. And there was he had a bass singer there named Johnny Venero, who was our fifth member.
Right. So, and then, who were those guys that were originally in?
We used to rehearse at my mother's house in Brooklyn, in Canarsie later on.
Right, right.
We moved into Canarsie.
Right, because when I was over Dave's house, he was living maybe off of Church Avenue, maybe off of, you know, and it was like a little kind of a brownstone in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it was on Rockaway Parkway in Canarsie.
Oh, okay.
He's still there.
Yeah, I remember the house. I remember the house. It's like steps walking up to the front door.
Yeah. Yeah, you went upstairs, and that was where he lived. And we would rehearse by him. And then we did Gloria, which was a fairly popular record. It never really hit
the mainstream. Let's go back. Tell me about Gloria. Whose idea was it to do Gloria, and and how did that come about?
We went in to do some other material. And he always liked the way we did Gloria, and we didn't even want to do it because it was just done like a year earlier by the Passions.
Right.
And he said, "Oh, look, we got time on the studio, do it." So we did it, and that's the one that actually that they picked up.
Gloria,
it's funny now. When groups are standing on the corner, and after that, you know, when groups were doing their thing, the big groups, little groups, whoever, and yeah. they said, well, let's do Gloria, because, of course, they call it the national anthem of doo-wop,
right.
And all of that stuff. But then the question always came back, are we doing Vito's version? Are we doing the Passion's version? Which version are we doing?
Well, of course, the Cadillacs who did it first.
Right. And of course, you know, you do know that the Mills Brothers were the first ones to have anything.
Yes, but I've heard it, but it's really not the same. The root of it was, you know, it made the Cadillacs go in and do the way they did it.
Exactly.
And then everybody did it like the Cadillacs afterwards.
Well, and you know what? The way I heard it was the Cadillacs went in there, they kind of ad-libbed the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah. Speedo told me that when they went in there, they didn't have any idea what they were going to do with it, and they kind of ad-libbed it. You know,
I know we've done many shows with Speedo on the same through the years, rest in peace, and we always had a lot of fun with that record, you know. Well, we're going to do it. No, we're going to do it. No, you're okay. I'll let you guys do it. But we ended up, we both would do it, you know.
Well, I pretty much now on PBS, didn't they have a whole bunch of groups doing it? I think.
Yes. They had the lead singer. They had Vito, Earl Speedo Carroll,
right.
Jimmy Gallagher. I think, and I'm not sure if Earl Lewis was on there.
I think he was. You know, because you know Earl gets carried away when he does his voice. He's like, you know.
I know.
You know, he's the only guy I know that can start like singing the false thing, and then all of a sudden he starts like scatting with it.
Right. I know. My favorite version was Earl Carroll. Speedo.
Yeah, well, you know, let me tell you about Speedo. I got friendly with him years ago because Harmony Street did a lot of shows with them.
Right.
And
great guy.
And believe it or not, when I did the interview with him, it was his very last interview, and his very last show was a show that he did in Boca a few years ago. And I would talk to him a lot, you know, after he got sick, and I was talking to him in the nursing home, and he even told me, you know, Don K. Reed asked me for Speedo's cell number, which I gave him, and Don used to call him in the nursing home as well. And he told me they wanted to take off his leg, and he wouldn't let them, and he was getting sicker and sicker. And then finally calls me up one day, and he says to me, I'm coming back. I'm feeling really good. I'm doing really well. And I'm saying to myself, and I taped that. You know, he didn't know I was taping it, but I taped what he said.
Right.
And then he started to go really downhill, and I spoke to his daughter-in-law, Princess, and she calls me up, like, be still my heart, and she says, you sent us a couple of pictures that you took at the Boca show, because I was sitting front row center and I had the wide-angle lens. She
right.
said, we're going to use one of the pictures that you took. We're going to blow it up and put it in front of his coffin. And can you and Paulette come to the funeral? And I said, we can't. But my heart was racing so fast, and I said to myself, you know, like, be still my heart, because he was one of the sweetest, nicest. And a lot of things people don't know about Speedo, he had one of the greatest leads for a ballad. I mean, the Cadillacs had some killer ballads that most people are not aware of, you know?
Definitely. I agree. I was a big fan of it.
You know, they,
we did a lot of shows together, and we went to California together. We went to Cleveland. Cleveland, we went like different. It was always a pleasure and a lot of fun.
I mean, when he opened his mouth and smiled and went, "The girl I love," I mean, you know, it filled up the whole room with that word and
That's
the big
right.
smile and the teeth shining. To me, that was almost like freeze frame that, and that's
yep.
that's doo-wop. Put it right in the encyclopedia.
I agree.
You know?
And that he was a he was a national treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to tell him that. He used to say, "Oh, you rascal, you."
Yeah.
He used to call me. Yeah, we had a lot of, we went to Cleveland for the grand opening ceremonies for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Wow.
With Norman Knight. And,
wow.
And then we were at the Universal Amphitheater in California a couple of times.
Well.
So, you know, I got to know him good. He was, gentleman, a real good man.
Yeah, well, you know, The Rock is an interesting place. We got friendly with Terry Stewart as the CEO. The way we did it is, you know, Harmony Street went to the White House in 98, and we were the entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the White House Christmas party. And what happened was Terry saw us, there was a Fox News feed of us going into the White House,
right,
you know, like doo-wop in the White House, and it got sent back to the Connecticut Fox, whatever, and he was living in Stamford, Connecticut at that time. And so he, you know, the following week he invited us to his New Year's party, which was like a who's who. And I saw his house, you know, with all the memorabilia. And he told me, he says, he was the CEO of Marvel Industries, you know, Spider-Man and you know, all of those superheroes.
Yeah,
and,
wow.
And he, but his interest was in rock and roll, and he had one of the biggest collections in the world. And
he
had, like, Percy Sledge's Gold Record on his wall. He would buy up all these gold records from the old stars who needed the money and whatever, and he had jukeboxes and guitars from John Lennon and, I mean, stuff in his house. And so he told me that they approached him one day and they said, no better person than to become the head of The Rock than you. And he quit Marvel in a heartbeat. And they went downhill until they had started having the Spider-Man movies put them back on the map. But he became the CEO of The Rock. And we had talks about how political it is, and really and truly there's people that don't belong in there that are in there, and people that should be in there that are not.
Like Johnny Mundell.
Well, he told me, we talked about John, and what he said was, unfortunately or fortunately, John's had a few million sellers, but some of his tunes, like, you know, Step by Step and Angels
right.
Listened In, were number one East Coast hits, and a lot of them weren't as big nationally, and but he is nominated and he might get in. See, the problem is they've moved on from the R&B groups. They're into the rockers now, and there's a nucleus now of, you know, the Boss, Bruce, Paul Schaefer, and that whole clique. How
right.
do you think Darlene Love got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She hung out with Bruce and Little Stevie and that clique and did the stuff on Letterman every year. Don't you think that if Darlene is in the Rock, and don't get me wrong, Darlene and the Blossoms, they were the backbone of the industry for many, many years, you know, with
right.
their backups, but damn it. If Darlene is in there, so should all the Crystals be in the Rock, period.
Yep, you're right.
You know, Lala should be in there, Dee Dee should be in there, end of story, you know.
Right.
And so, so it's not always fair. And, I mean, shit, I can think of a long list of groups that deserve to be in there and are not. And I always told John, I met John, believe it or not, at the Cloud Nine, which became,
right.
you know, which became the World, which became the Etc. No, it was the Etc. Lounge, which became the Cloud Nine, which I was a regular at. And I was there the night that the Del Satins and the Rhythm Method and Johnny was there, because I used to see Johnny there.
Was that up in the Bronx, the Cloud?
No, that was
that.
That was,
I don't remember that.
That was on Route 110 in Huntington,
oh,
the Cloud
okay.
Nine. And that's where the Brooklyn Bridge was born. But we also sang with my group, The Islanders, at Clay Cole's World after Murray lost his liquor license in Roosevelt Field. And we
right.
used to open up for Johnny all the time. And Johnny was then playing bass with it was Johnny Maestro and a Crest with Lois Lee, Joey's wife. And Johnny was playing bass at that time. The Brooklyn Bridge, there was no Brooklyn Bridge at that point. The Satins used to work there as well. You know?
Right. Right, I seem to remember that now.
Yeah, mid-60s, I think, something like that. You know?
There was a girl in the original Crest, too.
Yes.
When they were on Joyce Records, which
oh,
the
yes.
sweetest one. That was Luther Vandross's sister.
Yeah, well, Patty
Vandross
was, well, you know, Johnny always used to tell the story about how Luther was 5 years old and he used to play in the corner.
Right.
And they used to have to give him something to do because she was babysitting him. And he would always say, you know, how did I know?
That's true.
Who knew? You know, it was like a crazy time. But anyway, so here you are. and you're recording a whole bunch of stuff, and then all of a sudden you do Gloria, and how did that climb out of the mix?
It was picked up by Rayner Records, they just put it out. It was mostly on the black stations like WWRL,
right,
and WNJR, and they picked it up, and it just started to make noise. It was
wow.
It was probably in the top 20 in Manhattan, in New York.
So,
but it never really went that far, that far.
So Hal Jackson and Frankie Cracker were playing.
Oh yeah, Hal Jackson. Hal Jackson's pet group. We would go all over with
him. Well, you know what's really funny? I have a picture that I took. It's got to be, goes way back. It's got to be 35, 40 years old, maybe 35.
Yeah.
And it was at Rye Playland, and it was Harmony Street was in that show. I think Luke Christie, I think Little Anthony, I think Roddy Spector, who was my neighbor in Danbury, Connecticut,
Right.
And the picture is me, Don K. Reed, and Hal Jackson.
Right.
And most people don't know this, but Hal Jackson was Don K. Reed's mentor, because when Don K. Reed had his school went to the radio station and did a tour, and he was motioning to Hal Jackson, who was on the air, and Hal played a record and came out and spoke to Don, and Don told Hal, "This is what I want to be when I grow up." And Hal said some words to him and whatever, and was really Don K. Reed's mentor going way back when Don was a kid. And so
wow.
I had that picture. I blew it up. I put it in a frame and I sent it to Don, and he actually has it in his living room, hanging in his living room. I don't know how I got into that picture, but I will tell you that.
Hal was quite a good guy. We once surprised him while he was on the air.
Wow.
Christmas Eve, 1963. We walked into his studio at WWRL on 58th Street in Woodside.
Wow.
While he was on the air, and we walked in, we did a cappella, we did White Christmas.
Wow.
And gave him a bottle of scotch.
Wow.
For Christmas.
Wow.
We just surprised him. We just walked in.
That's great stuff. And of course, I know you were on the doo-wop shop many times, of course.
Yeah, right.
You did a jingle for Don, which was a popular jingle.
Yes, I did that with the Newports.
Okay. And I do remember that jingle, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he played it a lot.
Yeah, but I need to get a copy of that somehow. It's got to be one around.
I don't even have one.
And probably Don doesn't have it, because a lot of them stayed with the station,
Yeah.
A lot of them, the groups sent. I was trying to put the word out for a while to get groups to start, sending in the jingles, or let's make a composite of them and reintroduce them, because a lot of the fans that listened, and I might say religiously, to Don on Sunday nights, turn the lights down low and all of that. And, they look forward to those jingles, man. Those jingles were just as popular as any of the damn hits.
Yep. We did the one that, "If there's oldies that you want, Don K. Reed for you." That's the one we did.
Yeah, no, and of course everybody does remember that one.
Right.
And it's funny here. I'm actually looking at a page on Wikipedia. And it says, the B-side of Hey Hey Baby was a tune composed by Murray Kanner, Frankie Fox, and Dave Rick. Now I want to ask you, did Dave Rick actually have anything to do with writing that?
No.
Okay, I figured not.
No. It was Frankie Fox and Murray Kanner.
Okay.
And that was... Yeah. And he must have been, Frankie must have been 12 or 13.
Right.
When he did that song.
Yeah.
And then when the Salutations, we were looking for material, and Frankie came up with that.
Right.
And says, that's a good, I remember that one. I told him, let's do it. And we did it, and it became the flip side of Your Way,
right,
and Unchained Melody.
And what's really funny, and I didn't even see this, next to written by Murray Kanner, Frankie Fox, and Dave Rick, it says here, an a cappella version was recorded by the Islanders in the late 1960s. And, of course,
right,
I was in that group.
Yes, I remember seeing it on albums.
Right.
And I said, oh, look at this. Somebody did a record.
Yeah. And Jimmy sang it. He sang it. Hey, hey, baby. I remember Jimmy.
Yeah,
Jimmy Hanley was the one that sang lead on that, you know. And what's funny is that when they took those pictures for Relic Records, they didn't even have the right names or some of the right pictures. One of the guys was left out of the group. It was, you know, one of the pictures. And it was funny. They don't care. They're just interested in putting it out. So
I'll give you a little funny story about that record.
Sure.
When we did it, of course, Vito did the lead.
Right.
But the bridge is not Vito. It's Frank Fox, who demanded to do the bridge because he wrote the song.
Yeah, it's been so long since we're apart.
That's Frankie. That's not Vito.
I miss you so. Come and break my heart. Something like
that. Yeah. Oh, those nights alone. Frankie had a very soulful thing because he was really into that Ray Charles and all the early R&B.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's how Jimmy tried to sing it, you know.
I'm an oldies freak from the beginning,
but
long before I was a singer, I was a collector.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is that Vito even said to me, "Oh man, you sang with that group that did Hey Baby." I said, "Yeah." I says, "Hey, what's the biggest compliment in the world is to re-record somebody else's record?"
Absolutely, I thought that too. Yeah.
Hey, hey, baby.
Oh. hey, hey, baby, let's fall in love again. Hey, hey, baby, let's fall in love again.
Now that you're back, I do so fine. You never go.
I love you so.
Baby,
hey, hey, baby, let's fall in love again.
Baby,
hey, hey, baby, let's fall in love again.
Let's
fall in love again, 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 again.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, because Harmony Street did a lot of Skyliner stuff because I had three girls and we could do it. You know, and all of that stuff. And Jimmy has always said to me, hey, man, I love the way you did that stuff, man. It was like, you know, because some, I'll tell you, there's all different kinds of people in this genre. When I moved to Florida, they said to me, oh, you'll see, man, you moved to Florida. Everybody's like smiling in your face and shaking your hand and kicking you in the ass at the same time. And it turned out to be that way. It's like everybody's like stabbing each other down here. You know,
okay.
So
yeah.
I don't take it seriously. I say to myself, I've done all my stuff already. Anything that comes now, if I get a chance to get on stage or do something creative, hey, that's gravy, man. Because it's like I did all my shit already. You know, it's like
I know,
nothing to regret. You know, but
sure.
You know, and then you think about guys in the genre, and you say to yourself, well, I say this. I am glad just to be a small pebble on a big, beautiful beach where you have big seashells, you have beautiful horizons, you have beautiful, and it's that beach that I call, you know, doo-wop and R&B. And I'm just glad to be whatever part of it I was, you know, with whatever I did and whoever I sang with and all the guys that I got a chance, all the guys that I worshipped, that I eventually got to stand on a stage with over the years, you know, and to me,
I feel the same way, because when we did our stuff, it was already the early 60s.
Right.
And all throughout the 50s, I was a big fan of all the groups.
Right.
And then in the 60s, when we got into it, we got to work with everybody, and it was a big, big thrill for me.
Right. No,
to be on the same show with most of these guys.
No, I do understand. So, Let me ask you this, because a lot of people think they know about the Salutations, and they thought, oh, you know, this guy was in the group, and then this one came in, and that one left, and whatever, whatever.
Right, we had a lot of that. Yeah.
And they really don't know. I mean, you know, I was friendly with Bob DiPaolo.
Right.
I wasn't even sure what his vintage was.
Right, right.
I mean, when did Bobby come in, and where did he fit in?
Well, he was in the original recording of Gloria.
Oh, okay.
Right, and after that he left. He was gone. He was never on anything after that.
Right. So when Dave, and we can talk about this, when
right.
Dave and Vito had the falling out, Dave immediately went back to Bobby DiPaolo and
put another group together.
And was courting him. Well, you know, I told you that I went to a few Rose rehearsals. And
right.
I wasn't so sure. If I'm not mistaken, Frankie Fox might have been to a couple of those rehearsals too.
He might have been, because I had dropped out a while and
right.
Frankie remained.
Right.
I dropped out and he remained. Then I came back and he left.
Right,
because he moved out of the country.
I was there, and I remember Dave telling us, there's going to be no Vito. It's going to be, we're all going to share the leads. And I remember all the guys that were in the house. I still have a recording, a cassette tape of that first night that I auditioned and everything.
Wow.
And what the harmony, it's somewhere in a box is that recording and Dave going, yeah, sing this one. And sing that one, and I remember everybody trying to sing Dawn, the Four Seasons tune, and a couple of other things, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that was later on then. Yeah.
Of course. Well, this was during the 70s that occurred.
Right, right. You during know, the 70s, yeah.
Well, I told you the story that I was going to a dermatologist in Bayside, and I walked in and I'm talking to this girl that's a receptionist, you know. I thought she looked good sitting behind the desk typing, and we get to talking. And I says, yeah. She says, what do you do? I says, I teach, I sing a little bit. I just went to an audition for an oldie group. She said, what's the group? I said, Vita with a Salutation. She said, my boyfriend is Vito.
Yeah, I know.
And that was Enos. Yeah, that's funny. Well, you know, when I talk about that with Vito now, he just kind of laughs, you know. He says, Dave Rick, he should only drop dead like tomorrow. And then I told you I called Dave Rick, you know, because I still had, I found his number somewhere in an old book, and we're talking. He goes, yeah, I remember you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes,
he's going to be 91 years old, and he doesn't even know what day it is.
Well, you know, and what's funny, I said to him, he says, I'm down in Florida. He says, yeah, that piece of shit Vito was down in Florida, too.
I know. It's never-ending. The never-ending saga.
I mean, I don't know how that came about or what happened to it, but, you know, it seems to me that the name was too important.
That hatred, I think, is what's keeping him alive.
Why did that happen?
Why did that happen? It's a never-ending fight between the two of them. You know, the lack of royalties, just accusing him of this, accusing him of that. And this, all the years. And then we had this big court battle in the 80s.
Aye.
5 years we were in court. About two of those years we were on an injunction. We couldn't use the name Vito and the Salutation.
I remember.
And that's when he put out that, what I call the phony group.
Right.
And
it was a phony group. And
it was.
I left them. I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it. But I did rehearse with them a bunch of times. You know.
And what we did was, we had the court battle. We had Don K. Reed, Norman Knight, Ronnie I. All of them came to court, testified that we are the only Vito and the Salutations they recognize or whatever book, not the other group, and we still lost the case.
Wow.
Because Dave Rick had owned the trademark.
Right.
And that's all they wanted to know. All that judge cared about.
Unbelievable.
Federal court. And it was a horrible time, you know, for us. Cost a lot of money for legal fees, and we ended up losing. And we had to use Vito Balsamo in group.
Yeah, I remember. Hold on one second. I got to fix something. I got to just see something. Hold on. Hey. Yeah, now I got it. For some reason, sometimes this recorder does funny things. I remember it was Vito and group, and Vito formerly of, and Vito, but you know, it's like, how do you have Vito in the Salutations and not have Vito? Doesn't make sense.
That's true. It was a crazy thing.
All right. I know what I want to ask you. I played every club in Long Island. I did from Lakeville Manor all the way out to whatever. And while I was doing, I had a group called Michael, believe it or not. We played, we were at St. James Infirmary with a house band for a while. Then we changed the name to Grand Boulevard. And we played Lakeville Manor a lot. And then we had a disco group called Devotion. And we did Lakeville, you know, whatever. And one of the groups that used to play back-to-back to us at Lakeville Manor for 5 nights a week, 5 weeks straight was a group called The Main Event. And Vito was in that group. It was a top 40 group.
Yeah, Vito, Randy Silverman, Rick Shaw. Yeah, they made a record called, I forgot the name of the record, but it was a sort of soulful. A soul record. It didn't make any noise or anything.
Right.
But that was in the 70s.
Right. Exactly right. And I used to see Vito at Lakeville Manor because we used to play Lakeville as well. And I don't know if you knew Lakeville Manor. It was right off the Lakeville.
Yeah, I know. It's right off the LIE or Northern State or something over there.
And they used to get, I mean, that place when it was packed had like 1,500, 1,800 people in it. They had all these different rooms. You couldn't get off the bandstand. It was so crowded. It was a great place to play. But I remember Vito playing there because we used to go see him there when we weren't playing.
I think Lenny Citrin was in the group at that time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I didn't really get friendly with Lenny until I came down you know, to Florida, and he was singing with the Mystic Group, and, of course, I was singing with Lenny as well for a while. And, tell me about Lenny's history with the group. How did Lenny work in and out of the Salutations?
Well, when we first started, Lenny had left for the reserves for about 6 months.
Uh-huh.
So he was like the extra guy. He was always around us. He sung with us. He was one of our best friends. Me and Frankie and him were like the three musketeers.
Right.
And then he wasn't around when we happened to form this group.
Right.
And when he came out, he came into the group later on. He's on all our a cappella cuts.
Right.
When we did My Hero and Dear Lord and the later stuff. Stuff he did in the 70s.
Right.
And he did a couple of the records in the 60s, too.
Uh-huh.
When I wasn't there. I had dropped out for a while.
Gotcha.
Like, So Wonderful, what else? He did a few of them. Bring Back Yesterday.
Right, right.
Yeah. Some of the stuff in the late 60s.
Gotcha. What's your favorite Vito and the Salutations tune?
It's a song that never came out. Dave Rick has it somewhere in a can. It was a finished master. It was a remake of a record by The Five Sounds called That's When I Fell in Love.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite. I think we never sounded better than on that record. And I don't have a copy of it. I don't know where it is. He claims he can't find it and all that. And that's my favorite recording.
Let's go to his house and threaten to burn it down.
I know. other than that, we did a lot of good stuff. I loved Somewhere Over the Rainbow. We did a lot of recording.
Who's Norm Bergen? Was he one of the producers of Hey Hey Baby? Do you know that?
No. Norman Bergen came in later. He did Hello Dolly with us. And he later became associated with Dawn. That did with Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Ah.
Yeah, he was a producer on some of those.
Yeah, because I know the name.
Candido, and
right.
Not Three Times, and all stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was hooked up with, I think, with the Tolkiens.
Right.
Very talented guy.
What about the tune "I'd Best Be Going," which I like a lot, you know? Yeah.
We had Ricardo Rey, who became a very big name in Latin.
Right.
And people like that.
Right.
And it was actually a flip side of So Wonderful. Now I'd Best Be Going is a popular record on the Northern Soul.
Oh, listen to me. The Islanders did a tune called Where the Lights Are Bright, and we did four sides for Gino Moretti. He was with MGM Records, and he had a subsidiary called GMC Records. Gino was the one that actually signed Connie Francis years ago, and I think he died. So I've been trying to find him to try to get some of the other tunes that we recorded in those days. And so Ray Cerrone from the Bell Notes wrote a tune called Baby Pack On. And it's by the Islanders on GMC Records. And one day I decide I'm going to search it on the web, and it turns out the tune's worth about $300, and it's a Northern Soul hit. I don't even have a clean copy. I got a scratchy copy. And I try to get in touch with one of the collectors that has it. He didn't get back to me. But I'm laughing and I'm saying to myself, who knew? I mean, you know, this stuff goes around and around. And then I met a guy recently that says that they have it in their collection. And I said, how did you get it? He says, well, I buy collections and I buy, you know, and it's funny how collectors, they're like magnets. This stuff just comes to them. But I said, how the hell? I mean, I don't know how many were pressed. I know Where the Lights Are Bright was picked with a bullet in the late 60s, the same week as Kind of a Drag. Kind of a Drag went to number one by the Buckinghams, and that record just like fizzled out because they didn't want to put a lot of money behind it.
Right, right. It's an old story.
Yeah, you know.
I Best Be Going became a big Northern Soul record. And Liverpool Bound that we did in 64,
yeah,
when the Beatles came, is a big cult record in California, I heard.
Oh, I know that record very, very well. Tell me about the talented Randy Silverman.
Oh, Randy, when we met Randy, our first tenor, Ray Russell, quit the group at that time, and we had a lot of gigs coming up. We had to find somebody quickly.
Yeah.
So Dave Rick knew Lou Fargo from Fargo Records.
Right, yeah, I remember him, yeah.
And he told Dave, he says, listen, go down to just in this place in South Jamaica.
Yeah, Fargo was the Aquatones, right?
What?
Fargo had the Aquatones. Right.
And then later on, we did Liverpool Bound on Wells.
Right.
Another subsidiary was Lou Fargo.
Right.
So we knew him from that. Now, later on, a couple of years later, we were looking for his first tenor, and he told us to go to Bernice Johnson's dancing school in South Jamaica. We go there, and Randy is singing lead for the Chanters.
Okay.
Now, one of the Chanters' mother, Bernice Johnson, and they used to rehearse at her dancing school.
Wow.
And they were breaking up because at the time the story was that the group was going with Dionne Warwick to be her backup group in Vegas.
Okay.
And there was no need for Randy. He was the lead singer.
Right.
The minute we heard him, we said, okay, you're in.
Right.
And then he was great. Still is.
He's a pisser. Now, he sang with the Impalas for a while, too, didn't he?
Yeah, after us.
Yeah, because we did some Harmony Street shows when he was with the Impalas. And I remember Lola from Lola and the Saints being with the Impalas, too, with the red dress. You remember?
Right, she replaced him.
Yeah.
She replaced Randy.
Yeah, because we did shows with her, too. Lola's a piss and her husband, Tom, yeah.
Yes. Very good, Lola.
Yes, talented girl.
Great.
And listen, her Lola and the Saints group here in Florida, they don't get enough attention. They're great, and you know, but you know, there's only so many bandstands, there's only so many groups, and even the hit groups are having trouble getting work. You know, Caesar from the Times, I know Caesar from the Times is my good buddy. He calls me all the time, and you know, he says, oh man, you know, so we need to work more and whatever. Now, if the Times aren't working a lot, then the lower echelon is, you know, how do they work, you know?
I know. It's very, well, we were in the midst of putting a group back together.
Right.
Me, Vito, Randy, and John. We're going to use John Monfort.
Okay.
Who was in our group for a short time back in the early days.
Right.
And he's now working with Little Isidore and the Inquisitors. And,
right.
He's in the Capris.
Now,
and he said, if we need him, he'll be with us.
Yeah,
and we do need him, so...
Yeah.
So Frank Fox is in California.
All right. So Johnny's working with Wayne and Isidore and those guys,
right.
And Frankie. Well, you know, what's funny, too, is, you know, I'm friendly with Izzy. Here's an Izzy story. Harmony Street and the Inquisitors, Chappaqua on the Green. Izzy finishes. We did 90 minutes in the heat. Isidore goes up. He's got his typical brown suit jacket on with no shirt underneath, showing his chest.
Right.
And it's after the show. He's smoking a cigarette. I'm talking to him, and all of a sudden he goes completely pale, his knees start to buckle, and I grabbed him under his arms. He had a massive heart attack.
Wow.
And they put him in the car, and they actually lost his heartbeat on the way to the hospital. This, you know, and I talk to him about this every once in a while.
Right.
And of course he came back. And then, of course, a lot of his people, you know, went and became Planetones.
Yes.
And so, you know, here we are full circle. You know, Kenny's not well enough to sing and probably won't.
Right.
I shudder to say that because there's all kinds of rumors as to what he's doing and what he's not. But
right,
Frenchie
right.
is now with the Tokens. How that happened, you know, I think I told you that story too, that Kenny was supposed to be on Albanese's show and he got sick, and then they hired the Tokens to replace.
And Jay Traynor died.
And Jay Traynor died right in the midst of that. So it was Frenchie, Jay Siegel, and Billy at the piano from 10 o'clock in the morning until that night. Frenchie learned the whole show,
right.
You know, the whole 45 minutes, and said, okay, let's go. And that was his first night with them. And I said, are you going to do Looking for an Echo? And he said, I don't know the words.
Yeah, he never sang lead on it. So he probably never really listened.
So I sang it, I read it, and I sang it. I made a track with Kenny doing the false, and then the
right.
rest of the music track, and I sang it, you know, reading a piece of paper, and the whole auditorium sang it like an honor of Kenny. And then I told a little Jay Traynor story. You know, when Jay lived in Mineola, and he had just left the Mystics, Gino Moretti got him over the house in Glen Cove, and he brought us this song for the Islanders called Looking Out My Window. And
right.
we never recorded it. And then I told him years ago, I said, you remember that song? He says, no, I didn't write that. And so I started singing it. I says, Jay, what will I see looking out my window, looking out my window? And he looks at me and he goes, looking for my love. But till
you
that
remember?
Time. And he remembered. He says, yeah, I did write that. And he finds the demo when he sent me the demo. And I'm saying, somebody should record the tune. It's a pretty good tune, you know? You know, just in his honor, you know, because it was a decent tune, you know?
Right, right.
But, you know, we talk about all of those guys. Bring Back Yesterday. Were you on that record?
Bring Back Yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man. And I Want You to Be My Baby.
Want you to be my baby.
I Want You to Be My Baby, John Munford was on.
Right, okay, I got you.
I think that's the only one he was on with us.
And of course...
He did bass on that.
And of course now, Jimmy Spinelli was a salutation too, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You're all from around 1977 to 1990.
Wow.
13 years he was with us.
Yeah, well, he stepped into a good place, didn't he?
Oh, well, he sure did. The day after we had broken up in 1990... Next day, he was in the Dupree's.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good mix. And, you know, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, Tony Testa did play guitar with the original group for a while.
Right.
And of course, and if you look at all the guys, you know, in that group, you know, of course, their lead singer sang with the Dupree's, also sang with the old guys, you know, for a while, too. And, you know...
Yeah.
My feeling is that groups evolve.
Right.
And, you know, just like there were so many mystics, you know, that kept the name alive, you know, whether or not this one was fighting with this one or that one with that one or what was going on.
Right.
You know, you have guys that are busy keeping the group on the shelf and keeping the ball in the air. And all of those guys should get some credit when it comes to that. And just the fact that these guys have such a solid group, you know, and are singing the tunes, you know, in such a fabulous way with a big band, you know, to me it all counts, because I developed this theory a while ago, and it goes like this: shut up and sing. Nobody wants to hear your bullshit anymore. People don't come and pay money. They want to sit back in their seats and close their eyes and hear the tunes. They don't want to hear your bullshit, like who said what to who 30 years ago and who stuck at his foot and the other guy tripped over it and
right.
who and what. They only have a few years left, the audience, and they want to hear it the right way, and they want to hear it, you know, from guys that can sing it well. So, you know, that's really and truly what it's all about, and everything else is secondary.
Right. I have a quick story about the Dupree's.
Oh, sure.
We first met them. Unchained Melody had just come out, and it was starting to make a lot of noise on the air.
Right.
And we were booked to do the Stanley Theater in Jersey City.
Right.
With a whole bunch of other groups. Dupree's were on there. They had already had their first hit, and I think they were on their second hit at that time.
Right.
And we're in the dressing room rehearsing a cappella. We're doing Unchained Melody.
Right.
And suddenly a knock on the door. I look, a guy comes in. Hey, I'm Joey Santolo. I'm with the Dupree's. He says, you guys, I've been hearing that record on the radio, what you're doing. He says, but that ain't you guys. That's a black group. So I said to him, no, do you know any black guys named Vito? And he said, oh, it is you guys. I said, sure it is. And that's how we met, became friends.
Yeah, to send me down a love. Jerry. Oh, a love so true, a love that I can hold forever.
During that time, I was singing with the Joe Pastor Orchestras in Brooklyn. I was doing Wedding Screamers and all of that, you know.
Right.
And
right.
I think you remember that wedding outfit. They used to do the Glen Terrace and the Oriental Manor, and you know.
Yeah, I remember when Joey Dale was doing all those weddings in Brooklyn.
Yes, he was.
Now he's Joey and the Gigolos.
Right, the Joey Dale Orchestra. Well, Joey is Joey, you know. You have to admire Joey's tenacity and whatever, and he gets in there.
Oh, yeah.
I will tell you one thing about Joey. He works, man. He puts it together. He's a stickler for, you know, what's going on harmony-wise, and he makes it work.
Right.
And, you know, he's always working, you know.
He had a club Desiree in Brooklyn.
Right.
An After Hours Club. We all used to go there and hang out.
Right.
I know him for a long time. We had a lot of fun down there.
Do you know his brother?
No, I don't know his brother.
He and his brother don't talk. Well, you know, his brother is Richie DeLeo, you know, which is his last name, you know. And I knew Richie DeLeo. I never knew Joey Dale and him were brothers. And what's funny is, I know. One day I brought up one to the other, and he goes, "Oy." He says, "That's my brother." I said, "Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, like who would measure the two together?"
I know,
and that's another story about, you know, some, you know, brothers who don't talk to brothers and yada yada yada, and you know, life is so short, you know, Shelley. It's like
I used to hear that story a lot about the Five Keys,
right?
Well, Bernie West and Rudy West in the same group, they didn't talk for years.
Well, you know, I mean. And then you have splinters of groups and whatever, and you know, it's just silly. We talked the other day about Eddie Pardoce. You know, he lives not far from me, and I see him in Starbucks
right.
every once in a while. And you know, I know that he's working with Frank Iovino. You know, Frankie I knew for many years. And when I moved to Florida, I had just lost my mother, my brother, and my father, gone in the middle of a divorce, quit my dean's job. I had, like, all this stuff happening, and Frank says, "I want you to sing with the Burrows." And I said, "I can't sing, man. I can hardly get out of bed." You know, I came to Florida, wanted to start over again. And so I didn't. And then, of course, you know, George Galfo called me, and I started singing with those guys. But, you know... Frank Iovino was another guy that always kept the ball in the air and always had a group that worked. And you know,
I sang with Eddie many years in the Five Discs.
Right. And of course, the Five Discs had some great tunes to choose from. You know.
Oh yeah, we had some great stuff.
You know, yeah,
I love their stuff. I love their material.
Yeah,
and it was a pleasure singing with them all.
Well, when you take a tune like Unchained Melody. And then all of a sudden you're singing bo bo dim dim dim, you know. I mean,
the other side was that was the time. What a great record that is.
Yeah, you know. So you know, it's like, you know, we're talking about material that separates the men from the boys.
Right.
You know what I mean. So tell me what's coming up. You said that you got some things in the fire and you guys are starting to get together and sing again. What's going on with that?
Well, we did our gig, our first gig back together for many years. We did it May 31st at the Izod Center in the Meadowlands.
Right.
For Richard Nader.
Right.
Deborah Nader.
Right.
And it was a very good show. It was very successful for us.
Yeah.
We had a very good reaction.
Well, I think, didn't my friend Sonny Maxson take some pictures and or some video of that show that I saw?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of video of it on the on Facebook.
Yeah.
And we only did three numbers.
Right.
Like, you know, so many groups there.
Right.
And everybody loved it. And we decided maybe we could keep it up. And we're back together and, you know, we have something coming up in February at the Patchogue Theater.
Okay, great.
With Mickey B.
Right, good.
And now we're trying to get some more stuff before that. Put the word out there that we're here. I mean, we haven't been around for a long time, and I think everybody's getting tired of the same old groups.
I mean, absolutely.
As good as they are. How many times could you see them? And we'll be like new blood. Even though we were around before half of them.
Look, Vito and the Salutations should have been in the mix all along. I mean, you know, when you really think about it, I don't know why they were gone that long in the first place.
Well, that all has to... I know this is going to go on the air, but I don't care.
It is.
That's all due to Dave Rick.
Well, I think what you should do now is get the group back together. You guys should rehearse it so that it's tight as whatever, and then go and stand in front of his house and sing. You know?
He wouldn't even know we're there anymore.
something.
Right, but you know, the point, you know, that reminds me, there's an old joke where the parents are like 96 years old and they go to the lawyer and they say to the lawyer, "We want a divorce." And the lawyer says, "You want a divorce? What, are you crazy? You've been married for 70 years, you know, and you want a divorce?" And the husband says, "Yeah, we were waiting for the children to die."
It fits in, because I think we're all going to die, all the guys in the group before him.
Yeah. They didn't want to hurt the kids' feelings, so they were waiting for them to die.
That fits in. That fits the occasion. Well, anyway, he's a lot of the reason why we didn't want the aggravation with the name, with the courts, with the money for the lawyers. You know, it's a part-time thing for us, and it turned into a nightmare.
Well,
because of that.
Do you think his children are probably, you know, older than you? You think they're aware of any of it?
I'm sure they're aware of it, but I don't know if they really want to do anything about it.
Yeah.
After all this time, because, you know, they're older now. They have their own lives, and I don't know if his son talks to them, but his daughter is almost my age.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know.
Send her tickets.
Well, we'll have to. We got a couple of tricks up our sleeve, but.
All right. Okay. So let me ask you this: how's Vito doing? How's he singing lately?
Vito's good. He's filling in for different guys, different places. Yeah. I see him around. He did a great job with us in the Izon Center.
Cool. Well, he's funny on stage, you know.
Hey, he's very good on stage. He's been on stage since he's a kid, so he knows what to do, you know.
Right.
And let's say hopefully we'll get some recognition that's long overdue since all these years we were held back.
And rightfully so, because, you know, it's like I said, I was very, very bummed out. You know, Stan Zisk is a very good friend of mine, going way, way back on Long Island. And I used to say, Stan, you know, you guys were one of the most underrated groups. Who knew that you had, you know, the average person doesn't know that they were the sound on every Dion record. The average The average person didn't connect the dots that Freddie and Les were part of the Brooklyn Bridge. All they knew was the Brooklyn Bridge. All they knew was Dion. All they knew. And I think to myself, they were probably on more records than anybody. And yet you talk to these promoters and they say, "Oh, you know what? Where am I going to put them?" They had Teardrops Follow Me and da-da-da-da. And I said, "What are you kidding me? These guys were the backbone of the industry for a million years. They've been on more records than anybody that ever recorded."
I agree.
You know?
But unfortunately, they didn't get credit for it. And Tommy also, Freddie's brother.
Of course. Well, you know, now, I don't know if you've heard them lately, man. They are so good.
I haven't seen them, no.
All right. Les is singing with them, of course.
Right.
And Tommy is singing with them. And, of course, Freddie's gone. You know,
we
were on a cruise with the Bridge when they had Roy Michaels right after Johnny died. And, of course, my wife, Paulette, and Grace spent the whole cruise, you know, together. And, you know, it was very emotional. They almost couldn't work. And, you know, it's like I go back with Les, you know, all those years. And,
yeah. Sure.
But Les, to me, you know, when he's singing with the Satins, his face is all lit up. And, man, their sound is good. I mean, I'm going to send you some of their stuff. You're going to say,
Les,
oh,
good
man.
Tenor. Good tenor.
Yeah.
Great tenor.
You know, Les, you know, and a good guy. You know,
we rehearsed in the same building. Here's another good story.
Huh.
We used to rehearse in the Ed Sullivan Theater building before it was the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Huh.
And we all would rehearse up at 1697 Broadway.
Right.
And they had little rooms. Everybody rehearsed. We used to rent them out. And we would finish up maybe 10 o'clock, whatever. And we'd run into them on the elevator all the time, going back, going home.
Right.
And we'd say, we're better than you. No, you're better than... No, we're better than... We'd have, like, friendly fights on the elevator. Who's a better group?
That's funny.
And they said, every time I see Les and
Tommy, I bring it up and they start laughing.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She loves you, no, no, no.
Yeah, we're not a Liverpool, hey, baby.
Hey, no, no. Hey. We're back in our bed and leaving for England. Though the Beatles got it all over here. We're back in our bed and leaving for England. We'll make it big of a dip.
Because we're
Liverpool bound, Liverpool bound. Ooh, 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 ooh.
She loves you, no, no, no. I don't want to hold your hand.
I just want to go.
Last night I said these words. We love from me to you. The jolly fellows who think us the most.
And we were staying, it was a record house. And so, but we stayed over,
I think it might have been the week we did, we taped American Bandstand.
Uh-huh.
We were on there. There's a clip floating around of us being on there.
Right.
And we were staying at the Benjamin Franklin Hotel in Philly. And Vito brought a homemade wine from his Sicilian father made. And to me, it tastes like cough medicine.
Uh-huh.
But we were drinking it up in the room. We all got pretty drunk.
Right.
And I went to sleep. I wake up. I'm in the lobby on the bed. They wheeled me out of the room. I was so drunk. And they put me in the elevator and went down to the lobby. I went down to the lobby and I woke up and with my underwear. Vito always tells this story. It was quite embarrassing. It was a lot of fun.
No, that's pretty. And how was it working with Dick Clark?
Dick Clark was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was very nice to us.
Yeah.
We worked on the same day with Chubby Checker and Neil Sedaka.
Cool.
And we were all sitting in Dick Clark's office signing papers.
Right.
Everybody couldn't be nicer. Including him.
That's cool. Did he let you keep the money?
He let us keep the money. It wasn't a lot of money.
Groups tell me, yeah, we paid Dick Clark. We had to give him back the check, sign it back over to him.
No. Ours was, the whole check was, after taxes, was $87 a man. No big deal. It was 100 minus tax.
Well, he felt pretty much that... you know, the exposure that he was giving you, you couldn't buy at any price. So, you know, that was...
Of course. We would have done it for nothing because, you know, he was promoting the record.
Now, let me ask you this, because I also did Clay Cole's last interview, and, you know, I knew Clay from all of those years ago, and, you know, here I was now being introduced by Clay Cole, like, in the 60s, and then we did a couple of shows just about 2-3 years ago. And we used Clay as the MC, and here was Clay, and I said, my God, all those years later, he's introducing me on stage. And
right.
I did a great interview with him. It was actually his last. And, you know, he really let it fly, and he told me an awful lot of stories, you know. But did you work with Clay as well?
Yes, we did. We did his, when he was on Channel 11, we did twice. We did
High Noon, and when it came out, and then we did the Banana Boat song when it came out.
Wow. Well, you know what's really funny? All of those clips were lost because if you remember WPIX Channel 11,
right,
they were a low budget station. They took all of that kinescope and all of that tape that they used to tape on, and they taped over it and they reused it.
That's a shame.
Because they didn't have the budget.
I remember the Del Satins were on there a lot.
Oh yeah, they were always doing skits on there, you know, as well.
Yeah.
But
right.
Yeah, but I will tell you that very little of that stuff is around, and some of that stuff was like priceless because
yeah, I never saw any of the stuff we did again.
And Clay, he was one of the few people, unlike Dick Clark or any of the other guys, that used to get out there and dance with the kids.
Right, yeah, he was nice. I like Clay. We did some other shows for him at Play. He used to do a show at. A dance, actually, Land of a Thousand Dances.
Oh, yeah.
In the Robert Creed Hotel in Newark or something.
Right. And he also did Palisades Park a lot, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did Palisades a lot, but not with him. We did it with Cousin Brucey.
With Brucey, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Cousins. Yeah. Brucey's a trip, you know.
With his leopard suit.
I did one of Brucey's few interviews. He doesn't, you know, Brucey doesn't interview for other DJs, you know, and all of that, but because he's Brucey. But he's been pretty good to me and whatever. And he just, he actually emceed one of the shows down here in Boca, one of Joe Marione's shows, you know,
right.
just recently. So, you know, he's been down here and,
I remember doing, Palisades with him with Tony Bennett on the bill.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it had to be like 1963 sometime. Yep. And, another thing, I don't know, you know, I was backing up Kid Kyle for a couple of years.
Oh, you know what? Well, you know, I'm friendly with Marty and I'm friendly with Kid, and I did a big interview with him. It was one of the best that he did, and I said to him now, I says, here you are, all grown up. I said, and when you started, you were a snot-nosed little kid looking up to all of these idols. I says, now you've been in the business for as long as some of the people that you looked up to, because you know you spent your whole life in the business.
He's in the business about 10 years already.
Yeah, well, you know, he's coming into his own. You know.
Yeah, I enjoyed working with him. It was me, BJ, and the Warren.
Yeah, Warren is everywhere.
Yeah, and we did it for a couple of years. And Nice experience.
The only one that's missing from that mix is Alex Augustine, who sang with everybody on the planet.
Right. That's right.
Alex
He's
is
a good friend of mine, Alex. I see him all the time.
Yeah, and a great guy. And what's really funny about Alex is, you know, you got a lot of guys walking around, yeah, I sang with this group, I sang with that group, I sang with this group. And then there were certain guys that when they say it, they mean it.
Yeah, he's one of them. And my outstanding joke is every time we see a picture of each other, anyway, on Facebook, we ask, oh, you're terrific. Who's your embalmer?
Yeah, really. Well, what group were you singing with that day? And of course, BJ, you know, BJ is a pizza. How do you like me now?
BJ, we had a good time back at Kyle up. Next to the last show that Johnny Maestro ever did,
right,
at the Parker Playhouse.
Yes.
We were on the bill with him.
I know that. I do know that.
Yep. And I told my wife, I said, boy, he don't look good. I don't think I'll ever see him again.
Yeah.
And 2 months later, he was gone.
Yeah, and I spoke to him the night before he passed away. Grace put me on with him. Johnny Farina was over the house. And he said to me, Mike, this really sucks, man. You know, it's like, it sucks, and it's, you know, like, and then the next day I saw on Facebook that he was gone. So it was, you know, big loss. He, you know, he wasn't ready to go.
No, that's for sure.
He had a lot of good years, and I think he sang right up until the end, man. He did like, the last couple of shows he did perfect shows.
Yeah, like I said, the one we did with him and, at the Parker Playhouse,
yeah,
he had to sit on a stool.
Right.
But he sang. He did the whole show, and he sounded good.
It was hard to look at him that skinny, you know.
Right.
It was
very
hard. Yeah, it was really tough. And you know, like we say, there every day, if you go on Facebook, and I happen to like Facebook, you know, not for the bullshit, but
yeah,
for keeping in touch with the guys, you know, in the genre and everything, you know, because
yeah,
but every day you look and somebody really important is they're gone.
Yeah, well, another good guy was B. Best from the Jive Five. He just left. He just checked out too.
You know,
I know him for many years too.
I do the only website that Gene. I have a page on my website, which is the only authorized Eugene Pitt page, believe it or not, with Mary Garcelon. And, you know, I haven't been paying that much attention to it lately, you know. But, you know, Gene, of course, you know, what can you say about Gene and those guys? I mean, and Frank Pitt, and, you know, I mean, those guys, they invited one time the three girls from Harmony Street down to Herkimer Street. They said, come on down, honey. You know, come on down with me. I'll take you shopping for like some real good stage clothes. You know, we'll go down to Herkimer Street and we'll go down and shopping, you know, and da, 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 da.
That's my old neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Gene, another story, Gene lived right around the corner from me. And I didn't know him because Gene's about 5 years older than me.
Right.
And he grew up around the corner from me on Liberty Avenue in the apartment house. In that same building, Eddie Murphy was born.
Oh.
And Eddie Murphy and his father and uncle used to sing with Gene.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, because, you know.
And then they moved to Roosevelt, Long Island, yeah, and the rest is history.
Yeah, but, I mean, Eddie knows his stuff, you know. Stevie Tyler used to sing with Ray Cerrone in the Bell Notes when he was a young kid. They used to have him come in and sing. He has, believe it or not, a doo-wop past.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. That's.
I know his real name is Tallarico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, and a lot of these guys have stories. You know, that's why I like to do the in-depth interviews. I mean,
right.
I wasn't aware. Well, I guess I was aware, but, you know, we modeled Harmony Street a little bit after Manhattan Transfer because I had the three girls. And we did not only the doo-wop stuff, but we did This Cat Is High and we did Jabba Jive and we did all that tough stuff, you know.
Right.
And Tim was very much aware of us. And he said to me once, you guys were as good as we were. We were just better produced. And I said, get out of here, whatever. So I said to him, I did like a 3-hour interview with him, and he's a pisser, man. He's funny, and he talks music, and he talks chord structure with you, and he talks, you know, because I play guitar, and I arrange harmony, and it's, you know, it's.
Tim is very, very, very talented.
Yeah, and so I said to him, you know, when you're singing on one mic, because I remember with the girls, you could actually get up close. You see what they had for dinner. There's a little broccoli over here, whatever. He says, I'll go you one better. He says, I'm like the shortest guy in the group, you know, there's Alan
right.
and the girls. He says,
like me.
and I usually stand a little off to the, you know, to the side, you know, when I'm singing whatever. And I do fills. I'm in the bass, but there's only four of us. So I'll jump up to baritone and then I'll jump back down to the bass, do some bass fills. And then I jump up. He says, and that's how we get the full sound. You know, when you listen,
right.
It sounds like five people, but it's really four because we're jumping all over the place. He
right.
says, but every once in a while, he says, one of the girls will let one go on stage. He says, and if you see me move very quickly to the left, he says, you know what happened because those girls were ripe. And I said to him, you want me to leave that in there? He says, of course I want you to leave them there. He says, that is one of the most important parts of the Manhattan Transfer saga. He goes to me.
I have a good Manhattan Transfer story.
Uh-huh.
We were doing the Universal Amphitheater in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And it was a doo-wop show with Tony DeLauro.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know Tony.
And let me start again. In the audience, unknown to us, was Tim Hauser and Alan Paul.
Yeah, well, he lives right out there.
Right.
Yes.
And In the meantime, the show was on, and they came into the back to see the groups, you know, to the dressing room.
Right.
We had a very beautiful dressing room with sofas and carpeting and a bar and everything. It was really nice.
Right.
And they came in, and I was sitting out in the audience. Now, I know Tim Housen a long time from the early days.
Right.
And he came in the back, and he said, with Alan Paul, and he says, "Is Shelley still in the group?" So I see Vito comes. I see Vito come out from the side. I was sitting on the side watching the show. He says, "Shelley, come inside. Somebody wants to see you." I go inside and I see Tim, and it's like in a movie. We run toward each other, slow motion. You know,
right.
And then he says, "We're talking and talking." And Eddie Paducci was in the group at the
time.
And he says, "You know." It was nice. Oh, I said, "You know, it's nice of you. I see you. We put Unchained Melody on your latest album.
Right.
You dedicated it to the Beat on the Salutation."
Right.
I says, "Would you like to do the song with us?"
Huh.
And they look at each other. They said, "Of course."
Right.
She says, "I said, where are you sitting?" They said, "We're up." You know, he told us where he's sitting, and we come out and we get a couple of our numbers, and then when we get to Unchained Melody, we say, "Oh. Here's our biggest hit, recently done by some friends of ours, Manhattan Transfer. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody was here from Manhattan Transfer? Is anybody here from Manhattan Transfer who would have stand up in the audience?"
Yeah.
He said, "Come up here." And they came up, they did Unchained Melody. What an experience. And afterwards, they were jumping up and down.
Wow.
They had such a good time doing it with us.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was really a great thing.
Yeah, well, he is just a hell of a guy. You know, he's got a new... product out. He's marketed some sauce.
Yes, Italian sauce, right?
Yeah, which is very, very cool. You know. I call him every once in a while, and we talk and everything. He's very friendly with Wayne Smith.
Yes, and he was very friendly with one of our guys in the discs, Jack Scandora.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know Jack, who Jack is.
He used to ask Jack to help him do arrangements.
Right.
Write music and all that. Jack was excellent at that.
Do you remember the group Who's Johnny?
The group what?
There's a group called Who's Johnny from Jersey. Do you know the group? It's an a cappella group.
They became the Monells.
Yes, as a matter of fact. And Tim was very behind them. They're still working as... I see their name now on shows as Who's Johnny. What's funny... Yeah.
I remember they used to do Unchained Melody.
Yes, and what's funny about those guys is that... All the guys in the group are top tenors. There's really no...
I know. All tenors. I know. They were good.
Yeah.
They were very good. They're not good kids.
Yeah.
I guess they're not such kids anymore because they were kids when we met them.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
Well, you know, I've always said, Shelley, you know, you could take five guys that really sing well.
Right.
But, you know, maybe they can't blend. I mean, you know, to find the blend is very, very special. You know, because not everybody, you know, not every good singer can sing inside of that blend.
Right.
And to go even further with that, not every singer has the feeling for singing, quote unquote, doo-wop. You
right.
gotta have it in your head. There's
That's
a,
right.
there's
it's
a,
gotta be, it's gotta be in your, it's gotta be in your blood too.
There's,
you gotta, you know, like, when we start singing, when I go anywhere and I sing with guys, if the guys aren't from my generation, or you can't start teaching.
Yeah,
they have to know the stuff. They had to grow up a lot with it.
Well, what about groups now? Here's a good story. I'm friendly with Norman Fox. He tells me we're taking a trip to Barcelona. I said, "Why don't you look up the guys from the Velvet Candles?" Or the Earth Angels. I said, I had paella with the Velvet Candles when Paulette and I went to Barcelona, and we sat and we talked and whatever. They weren't singing at that time. So I hooked them up with Juan Ibanez, and it grew into a sold out show in Barcelona in which Norman Fox is going to go to Barcelona with his wife, and he's going to sing lead for the Velvet Candles, and it's like a sold out show. I mean, with a huge, huge audience, you know.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, which is great. So Norman calls me for this Albanese show that we're doing in October,
Right.
I'm emceeing the show, and he says to me,
"Where is that going to be, in Florida?"
Yeah, it's going to be at the Parker Center.
Is he bringing the Warren down with him?
No. He asked me to put together some Rob Roy's. Albanese is only bringing him in, so it's going to be me, Joe Neri, and Carmine DeSena, who used to be with Reunion, and we're going to be the Rob Roy's that night for Four Tunes. Yeah, you know, and which is interesting. And you know what's funny is he's taken the keys down like a half step, so when you're on the top of Dream Girl. The top note on that tune is just in between a top tenor and a low false. So and I'm hitting that note and I'm saying to myself, am I hitting it in a top tenor and blowing everybody, the other two guys away? Or am I hitting it in a false? You know, and it's funny. So we've been wrestling with that for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be cool. You know, just closely mic everybody. It'll be great. It'll be tight. We're not using a bass though. I don't have a fifth guy. So
right.
You know, but it'll be what it'll be. You know.
Yeah. I just thought of another story about Little Isidore.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was we were doing a Ronnie I show in Symphony Space.
Right.
Manhattan.
Right.
One like a collector show.
Right.
And I was with the Five Discs at that time.
Right.
And we were doing it, and Little Isidore and the Inquisitors were on the bill. And we were all in the same dressing room, and we're sitting around, and Alex Augustine happens to come, was at the show, and he came backstage, and we were throwing the breeze, you know.
Right.
And Alex walks in, and he says, at this point, I had never even spoken to Little Isidore.
Right.
I just, you know, He didn't respond, on purpose.
No, he's a character, David.
He didn't know who we were really.
Right.
But anyway, Alex says, "Shelly Bachansky, Vito from the Vito and the Saturday." And Isidore stops dead. He said, comes running over to me. "You were in Vito and the Salutation?"
Uh-huh.
I said, "Yeah." He says, "You were the Kings of Brownsville in East New York. Ah, you're the reason I'm singing."
Right.
He says, "I lived across the street from Metric's Candy Store on Pennsylvania Avenue, apartment house. And I was a kid, and I would listen to you guys from my window."
Wow.
And he really, we took him back. You know, he didn't realize I was with the disc. He didn't know who I was, you know. That was a nice thing, too.
Hi, this is Dave Brigati. I used to sing in the late 50s with the High Fives on Decca Records. Then I joined Joey D and the Starlighters with the Peppermint Twist and Shout and Hot Pastrami and Mashed Potatoes. And then I sang on all of the Rascal hits, luckily on Atlantic Records. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Well, but that goes hand in hand with what I was saying before. Isn't it great that you get into this stuff and it lights you up? I try to explain to other people that don't sing or don't do or don't. There is nothing that fills you up, and there is nothing more spectacular and spiritual than hitting harmony with a bunch of people who are tight, and the harmony rings, and it's whatever. I don't care if you're doing it on stage in front of 1,500 people. I don't care if you're doing it in front of a candy store. I don't care if you're doing it in rehearsal. It is a feeling that you cannot explain to anybody, because to have been able to do it in your life makes you a lucky person.
That's right.
It's just, you know, and you cannot explain that to anybody that hasn't been there.
Yep. You're right. Hey, we have another good story. We were 1962. We had just done Your Way.
Uh-huh.
And we were getting a little airplay on the black stations.
Right.
Nothing on the white station. And we got a gig. We were doing the Lois Pitkin, my neighborhood in Brown.
Right.
And on the bill with us was a brand new group that just came out with a hit record called Ruby and the Romantics.
Huh.
And they brought them in from Akron, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And no one has ever seen them.
Right.
Well, they came out before us.
Right.
Did the show, and I was flabbergasted. There was probably, till this day, maybe the best group I ever heard.
Wow.
Okay, now we're sitting there, 1962, it's probably one of our first gigs ever.
We're up on stage, and I said, before we go on, we're in the audience. I hear this group, and I turn to Frankie Fox, and the other guy says, I can't go on. I can't follow this act. We can't follow this act. You understand?
Yeah.
I'm not going on. I was shaking. I had tears in my eyes.
Wow.
I was panicking, right?
Wow.
That's how good they were. But we did go on. We did a great show because we had the hometown crowd.
Yeah.
Everybody I knew was in the audience, my relatives, my friends. So, but I'll never forget them, Ruby and the Romantics.
But you know what? I'll tell you how you overturn that. You just come out and you do My Hero and everybody just, you know, goes, yay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We weren't doing My Hero then. That was the early days. We were doing Unchained. No, not even Unchained. We hadn't even recorded it yet.
Wow.
Well, we were doing stuff like Oh, What a Night. Heartbeat stuff and stuff like that. We liked a lot of the black group stuff.
Right. So, Shelley, I know that if we had about 9 hours to talk, it still wouldn't be enough, but I really appreciate you taking out the time to talk to me about Shelley and to talk to me about the fabulous Vino and Salutations, which there are people out there that really know the group and love the group still to this day, and I just want to thank you for that. Now I want to ask you this also. What would you say to people who are listening who have been Salutations fans for all those years and are still Salutations fans and have your records in their jukeboxes and have their records and CDs in their car still to this day? What would you say to those people?
What would I say? I would thank them and tell them it's people like them that make it all worthwhile.
That's great. Well, take care. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
And just thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. I enjoyed every minute of it.
That's great.
Not acting all right. Don't count on me.
Don't count on me to be your pal.
Don't count on me.
Don't count on me to hang around.
Oh, baby, I'll be gone. How many girls they have it right? And no girl's gonna brush him aside. Who ends up first? Don't count on me.
Don't count on me to be your pal.
Don't count on me.
Don't count on me to hang around.
Baby, listen now. Take my advice. If you want me, better treat me nice. Don't start doing things that are wrong, or I won't be around too long.
In Cleveland, Ohio, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Negron, formerly of Three Dog Night, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Keep a light in the window, my door, do for me while I'm gone on my journey alone. For I'll soon be returning and yearning to see all that love light leading me home. When my journey will end, then I will find a to go beyond, willing to see your true love shining bright, like a star in the night. Keep a light in the window.
And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Oh, come, come, I love you too.
Will remember.
loaded. I know with a broken heart you'll go your way, and she'll go her way.
Tell him, tell him goodbye. There are tears. You say, darling, darling, how could you say that you and I are forever? After all, we've been together, together for years.
You loved her.
FM. The Artistics there, and One Way is what it was called. CBS FM. Hi, who's this on the line?
Hey, Don, this is Mike Miller up in Danbury from Harmony Street.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
You guys are going to appear at the White House, is that true?
That's correct.
Well, that's great.
We're going to be singing for the President of the United States and the First Lady on Wednesday night, which is the same day as the tree lighting, and this is going to be a party that Hillary Clinton is throwing in the East Room of the White House.
That's great.
We've been lucky enough to be invited.
Well, that's going to be a night you're going to remember for a long time.
Oh, I'm telling you. We're so excited, Don.
What would you like to hear?
How about Never 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 by the Jive 5?
Okay, we'll do that, and a little bit later on, maybe we'll play one of your things.
Oh, thanks a lot, Don. We love you.
Say hello to everybody.
I will do that.
The Doo-Wop Shop 101.
Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-ding-dong. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-ding.
Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-ding-dong.
Boom, 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 boom.
God plays you up and we love him so. All these good goodies, we'll never let them go. One thing is certain on CBS FM.
Wow.
Ring out, remember then. He's our favorite DJ. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam machine gun. His name is Don K. Reed. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam machine gun.
Boom, boom, boom,
ram.
Boom, boom, boom,
ram. Ram, 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 ram,
CBS FM, those are my guests, and I like the lyrics to that song there. That's a little jingle you guys made.
Rebel Emma, Don K. Reed.
Okay. I've never been called
Isn't
that
before. How it goes?
Remember all